Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Podcast One presents the Steve Austin Show Classics.
All right, rolling sound again, coming back with James Storm, the Cowboy, over at TNA Wrestling. Drinking a cold beer. What you got going down? He's got a Coors Light down there going over. I had a Hop Hinge IPA earlier. I just switched, James, to a Belgian Beaver. Have you ever drank a Belgian Beaver?
I've never drank a Belgian
I'm going to ask Beaver. You. I'm going to hope that you've never gone down on a Belgian Beaver. Anyway, be that as it may, we were talking about tag team wrestling, which I know you're very familiar with. You love tag team wrestling, as I do. Some of the things that bother me, James, tag team wrestling, is when someone is in the corner, the partner's in the ring, and they got the opponent in there, and you know maybe it's the babyface is is getting some heat on him and trying to make a tag, and the guy on the corner is short arming, he's alligator arming because that tag is there.
Right.
If he extends his arm, whether they're using the ropes or they got to hang on to the part of the rope by the turnbuckle, whatever the system is, not everybody has the ropes to hang on to.
Right.
But you've got to have that thing fully extended, and you've got to have your arm fully extended to try to make that tag when your partner wants to tag you.
Right.
The alligator arm really chaps my ass. Now, talk to me about this.
That's the truth. And I've seen it a million times, too. And I've probably been accused of it, too. All the tag matches I've been
to a degree. Now, I have too, James. Now, it pisses me off when I have to be put into that position.
Right, but when
get the fuck out there, guys.
Right. It's like you should be able to cut this guy off.
Right.
He shouldn't even be this close to me at all.
Right.
Or what pisses me off the most is when you got the, like, if we're the heels, if you got a heel – and he backs him up to the rope that the baby face is on, and you shoot. Why don't he just tag him?
Yeah. Blind tag him, tag him, do something, but just tag him.
Yeah.
Another thing that chaps my ass, and this could apply to a singles match as well, when a sumbitch will rake somebody's eyes and cut him off, and then shoot his ass into the ropes. What if you just raked his eyes? You blinded him. So you sending a blind man into the ropes, and now he's going to duck a clothesline and to do a jump over a drop down and reverse a hip toss.
Yep.
You blinded. Yep.
Or
you can't do that.
Or they give him a low blow, then shoot him off.
Yeah.
And he's running perfect.
Hit him in the jimmy, send him off, hit the road perfect. I don't get it. Another thing that pisses me off when they try to draw the referee. And you can draw the referee.
There's an art to it.
There is an art to drawing that referee. But when you start meddling that referee, putting the heat on him, and putting the heat on him rather than your team, you're trying to get gratuitous heat, the cheap heat. You ain't working.
Yeah, it don't help you any.
No,
because everybody hates the Earl Hebner that's in the ring right now. You know that they hate the referee. They don't care about you no more.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and we're using Earl Hebner as an example because Earl Hebner is probably one of my favorite referees, if not the favorite I've ever worked with. Probably the same with you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've worked with some good ones, too. Tommy Young I never got a chance to work with, but he's a guy I really liked to watch work. He'd slide around, jump around, slide in to make those three counts.
Yeah. Earl, I'm working with him today, and I don't see – he still jumps and slides.
Absolutely.
And counting. He's on all these house shows with me. I'm like, how in the hell – is he still doing it? And he just goes.
He just goes. I mean, but, you know, being a referee, it's just like one of the boys. I mean, you know, you're a good worker, you're a bad worker, and he's an outstanding worker.
Yeah.
And, man, that referee is so important in a match. And Earl, I was talking to Jimmy Corderas the other day and all about the mannerisms. Because, you know, like when they're out there doing their five counts or whatever, or their 10 counts when the guys are outside the ring and trying to get them back in the ring, or five count, and if someone's got someone in the corner and they're choking – you know, just the mannerisms. How big do they pantomime and play that action out? And it's a work of art, mister.
How stupid do you feel when you're a special referee and you have to do it?
That's what I was telling Jimmy Corderas. I had to referee a couple of high-profile matches, and I suck ass as a referee because I really don't even know the rules.
Yeah.
I'm a wrestler, and when the referee tells me I'm actually breaking a rule, you know, that's when I know, unless I'm working heel, then I know I'm doing something.
Yeah.
But I don't technically know all the rules that a referee should know.
Yep. In my career, like I said, I've only had the two major injuries. Last year I was a referee. I'm wrestling, you know, I've only had two major. Last year I was a referee and I tore my groin.
You tore your groin?
Trying to do a count. Because you know how they do the big elaborate count? Yeah. And I just threw my arm up and my leg up and I said, pop. And I was had to, you know, ear piece of my, and D-Lo, he goes, he goes, you all right? And you just see me on camera. And I had to throw a super kick at the end of it. And he goes, what's hurt? And on camera, you can just see me go, my dick. He said he was on the headset and just lost it.
All right. Actually, to the listeners of the Steve Austin Show, when you pull a groin, it's referring to your inside adductor muscles, not necessarily your dick. But as a point of reference, I'm sure that's what you meant.
Well, as a, surely as a lower abdomen
you did not
territory.
Pull your cock muscle on the cap. Hey, this is there's a couple of straight guys hanging out here. We got a couple of – I got Hershey, the Wonder Dog, and Mula, the new chocolate silver lap. She's going absolutely ballistic over here. So you pull a groin, refereeing. Jesus H. People get mad at me when I say it. Jiminy H. Cricket on a popsicle stick. Hallelujah. We're talking about tag team wrestling and things that irk me. In general, when you're watching a professional wrestling match, what are some of your pet peeves? Things that you don't like to see or things that guys are doing that aren't right?
You know, I've been accused of it too, and like the 10 punch in the corner.
What is it about 10 punches or 10 kicks in the corner?
And I hate chops. I'm like, if you're not Ric Flair, why are you throwing a chop? You know, because all you get is woo. Every time, that's all you hear from the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, I don't throw chops at all just because of that reason.
But what is it about the 10 punches?
I think people just do it just to get the, you know, get the damn crowd to count to 10, you know, but it's just, I'm like, okay, I'm not. So they're hitting me in the face and nothing's happening. And then they just shoot me off or something. Yeah. You know, to me, it don't make that much sense, you know.
Right.
So Terry Taylor always told me, he goes, if you got to hit them more than twice, then you shouldn't be in there wrestling. He goes, if you're in a fight, you're going to try to knock him out with one punch.
Well,
but
that sounds great.
Right.
But I've seen Terry right. do a million 10 punches on top of the second turnbuckle.
But he always tells me, always don't do the rapid punch, you know, because the crowd can't keep up.
Dude, there's one thing. If you're going to make your punches, you don't rapid fire fashion. I mean, you got to put some mustard on some of them, and you got to put some exclamation points behind some of them. But, yeah, when you just do the rabbit punches, they look like shit.
Sometimes they hurt.
And there's one thing, you know, that it's funny because a lot of times you'll get these guys who come from an MMA background or a boxing background and get to the business of pro wrestling, and they throw a technically proficient punch that is great for boxing or fighting or whatever. But when you're talking about pro wrestling, I love when the guys have just a good stiff jab.
Yeah.
You know, like Dusty had that just kind of either left or right-handed. Same with Lawler. Dundee, just that good straight punch or hook and punch that you could see from the front row all the way to the last row. But when you're in there with a real fighter, fighters fight. Beep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there and it hurts.
Right.
But you don't see it.
Right.
That's the whole point of pro wrestling. You got to see it.
Right.
So that always bothered me when guys try to throw those rapid fire bullshit. What if Mark Merrill, would throw those punches? And you know, not speaking disparagingly of Mark, he's a wonderful guy, but he was a Golden Gloves boxer.
Right.
So that when you're trying to sell his punches, he's a real deal fighter.
Right.
He had great
skills.
He
didn't want to get knocked out.
So I respected the fact that he was a talented puncher. But when you're trying to sell that shit, whole different ballgame.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sitting here talking with James, talking about everything under the sun. Traveling down the road, these days now, as we speak, 2014, not traveling as much, right, with the shooting TVs and stuff like that?
Yeah, we're probably doing, you know, 3 out of the 4 weekends every month on the road.
Okay, so that being said, who are you traveling with, and, like, what are you guys talking about on the road?
Man,
y'all still talking pro wrestling, right? You still, no?
No.
I
actually travel by myself now just because I've been doing it for so long, for 17 years, and, you know, I got a wife and kids at home. When I get on that road, I just want to peace and quiet, you know.
Now, dude, you like me. Now, you know, back in the day, man, there was as many guys you could get in a car, in a van or whatever.
You'd fill it up.
And fill in a hotel room, too. But then towards when I started making some money that I could afford to travel by myself, I did.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And I enjoy being by myself. Are you the same?
I'm the same way, man. I can, as soon as I get to the hotel, I can go over to a bar by myself and just sit there and have a beer and just relax and, you know, then go back to the room, go sleep, get up and drive 3 hours to the next town.
When you're driving down the road, you got the radio on, you listening to something, or are you just chilling, thinking about things?
No, I'm actually, like, when I'll drive down the road, listen to podcasts, or I'll listen to some different music or whatever, and I'll try to think of promos. Like, when I hear words, you know, from the music, I'll try to fit them into different promos and everything.
Now, I know you're the cowboy. I know you love country music. You live in Nashville. In that area, we hung out at the Legends Bar, but I mean, like, you got to be probably a little bit more diverse than that, I would imagine. You probably got a little bit of some edge to you.
Yeah, I'm what more of an 80s to? Rock band more than I am country anyways.
Really?
So, yeah, oh yeah. my first concert I ever went to was Skid Row. And,
really?
Yeah, I remember being there, man, and just with my cousins, and it was fun.
See, but I'm kind of the same way you is. I'm kind of trapped back in the days. I hate to call them hair bands because they just happen to have, it seemed like everybody had long hair back in the day. I got trapped in the attitude era when I've always thought professional wrestlers, every one of them had attitude.
Right.
They just saw fit to box that in as the attitude era as a, you know, a marketing scheme and as a very successful one at that. But, man, when I'm going down the road, I'm either listening to nothing, just listen to the wheels humming down the road because I love to drive.
Yeah.
I just love being behind the steering wheel. And so most time it's silence. But then, you know, it's the old Black Label. It's older Pantera. It's old Ozzy. It's old Rage Against the Machine. It's old Dokken, Rat, Crew. I mean, I'm just backing that old shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. And so, that's what I grew up on, too. And like you said, and, you know, driving down the road, a lot of times you're on some of these back roads or whatever, and you see some of the coolest shit you've ever seen. And that, I'm a sightseer. Like when I'm driving down these highways, especially, you know, around Arizona way and stuff, and you're just going through the mountains and everything out there, the hills, you know, it's some pretty cool sights out there to see. I'll take pictures and I'll tweet them out just because, you know, people around the world, they don't see shit like that all the time.
All right. Now you're 36. You grew up a little bit of the technology. I'm a little bit older school cat, and you got a generation on you. I got a decade on you. You just made a phone call when we took our beer break a while ago. You an iPhone guy? You a Samsung Galaxy? What do you got?
I got an iPhone. That's the only thing I really know how to work.
so you've embraced technology.
Yeah, I mean, because it just kind of helps me get my brand out there more, you know, with Twitter and, you know, all this social media.
Let's talk
media
about
stuff.
Just Twitter a little bit more. Let's talk about your website, which we hadn't talked about. And I don't think you're very active on your website.
No, I need to.
Like me.
Yeah, I need to.
I got a damn website and I don't do shit on. I got to do better at that. But let's go over your Twitter handle one more time and give your website address.
Yeah, I can
so
say
those
it now
that need
been
to
drinking.
Know will know.
Cowboy_J_storm. So is that not, and then also the website is sorryaboutyourdamnluck.com.
God damn, you ain't got to get hot about it. You know where I got that, right?
Yeah.
That's Mantell.
But I don't, he says, and one of the things he said to me before, I remember I did a dive out of the ring in Puerto Rico. And actually, I was in the ring and he kept doing it. He has these orange shorts on with the white socks and black shoes. And I was just, you know, and he goes, and I remember I had the guy in the chin lock. We was getting ready to go home. He said, God damn, you don't get paid by the hour. Let's go. And he goes, you know how hot it is? We was in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
We was down in Puerto Rico. Yeah. And I remember we was about to start fighting up in the crowd. And I was heel and I was working one of the clones. And he goes, where are you going? I said, we're going to fight up in these stands. He goes, no, you ain't. He goes, they'll kill you when you get up there. He goes, get back in that ring. And then I did a little, you know, little dive outside the ring. He goes, now, why do you want to dive outside of a ring? A perfectly good ring.
Yeah.
He goes, the only way I would dive out of a ring if some bitch was on fire. And that's the truth.
And see, there is very sound logic in the wise words of Dutch Mantell because he's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes as a young buck, you want to go out there and, you know, just that loud moment to grab that attention to say, check us out, to make a splash.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
He said, you can't pin the guy outside the ring.
Yeah, but.
And that's one of my pet peeves I was going to tell you about.
Oh, yeah.
I hate when guys pick guys up off the mat. because what's the name of the game? To pin the guy, and that's it. You can't pin the guy when you're picking him up.
I can understand that. But then, you know, what pisses me off is, you know, yeah, you got to be on the mat to pin the guy. But see, if you try to pin him several times, and then, you know, that doesn't work. So you got to get back in the motion because you got to entertain people. So that goes without saying. But when you knock a motherfucker down, and all of a sudden you pick his ass up and shoot him in the ribs again, not give him proper time to sell what you've just done, that really irritates me. But what irritates me more than that, when you're working with a green guy and you give him a hell of a bump,
and
you go to do something, or it's a double bump, but you're on the offensive mindset of this, and he beats you up.
Right.
He gets up off the mat before you do.
Yeah.
Well, he just took the big fucking bump, and all of a sudden this son of a bitch is on his feet. And don't get me wrong, I've been guilty of this many times. When I was green, I was a stupid son of a bitch. And those are the mistakes you make when you're green.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't be afraid. You know, the new cats out there that are trying to get into business, in your work, there will be periods, there will be commas, and there will be exclamation points. You just got to find out where to put those three elements in the match.
Yep.
And sometimes there's going to be long-ass holds. But those holds should be applied after you, after you've done just heat to your foe. What else you want to talk about?
Man, you can ask me anything.
We're sitting here at 316 Gimmick Street. Cowboy James Storm rolled in from Nashville, Tennessee, a fish out of water, so to speak. So when you're out eating here in Los Angeles, California, what kind of food you eating? I mean, because, man, I eat sushi about once a week out here because I got a good place about a half mile down the road. But what's your diet consist of, man? You look like a meat and potatoes motherfucker.
I am, man. There's a little bar right down the road here, and I'm usually here for 2 or 3 days, and I go right down there and have a hamburger. Hamburger and a beer. I'm like,
well, I tell you what,
cheat days right there.
Hey, if a caveman could wag his beard to look like James Storm, I am talking to a caveman here in 2014. Talking about pro wrestling and all kinds of bullshit. So you come out here for a couple of meetings. Your meetings go good?
Yeah, they went good, man. You know, I'm trying to cross over a little bit into the movie industry and TV, you know, try to get into some reality TV and, just have fun, you know, like that's to me, if you can find work that's, and you're having fun, then it's not work.
Well, yeah, it's funny, though, because you've been in the business for 17 years. You know a lot about hard work and working manual labor before you got in the business. And that's what you do. But you got to try to have a little bit of fun. It's interesting being in the business that I was in, you're in, the entertainment business.
Yeah.
But it's pro wrestling.
Right.
But it's a lot of work. But goddamn, it's the funnest job in the world. So when you come out here and learning about pro wrestling and paying your dues, and this goes to anybody in any walk of life, it's on the job training, it's on the life training, it's smelling bullshit from a mile away.
Yeah.
And knowing when someone's full of shit, knowing when someone's looking you straight in the eyes and speaking truthfully to you, knowing that you can take that man at his word, which is harder and harder to find these days. So when you come out here to Los Angeles, and whether you go to Hollywood or Beverly Hills or Burbank or any area out here, so you got a pretty good bullshit detector.
Oh, yeah.
You can smell what's real and what ain't.
Yeah. You know, I can sit there and talk to guys or whatever, and I'm just like, you know, they'll feed you full of shit. Oh, yeah, we can do this and we can do this. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, you're lying. Like, I'll believe it when it happens. And that's,
yeah,
and
we can, but will we?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can sit here and say we're going to do it all day long. But until you give me that paper to sign or until I'm on the set doing this, I ain't believing a word you're saying.
Man, I was watching some footage of you before you came over and reading all about you. Of course, I've watched you work for years. But as James Storm, the cat, the guy that's chilling home with the family, I know you like to ride horses. I saw you on a piece of property. What do you do for your downtime, man?
Man,
what occupies your?
I hang out with, you know, I hang out with my kids, you know, because, you know, I grew up without a dad, so I kind of know how it is. And, you know, being on the road all the time, you don't get much. You know, when you're going, you're not home at much at all. I hadn't been home for, you know, almost 2 weeks already.
Right.
And so I don't go home until Thursday, and I'm only home for 2 days. So while I'm home those 2 days, you know, I'll hang out with my kids, take them to Chuck E. Cheese or something like that. Or, you know, if they want to go see a movie, I go to a movie. But and then I have to cut my grass because of that damn homeowners association bullshit. But and But, you know, and then I got, you know, property with my horses and cows and all this stuff, and I work out, you know, because people that don't know anything about farming, you do that square bale, that hay,
yeah,
that's a workout.
Okay, now you just said two different things. You said homeowners association fees, and you said property where you keep your horses. So I must have saw some footage of you on your property because you was in a pretty expansive area.
Yeah.
So, but you live in a subdivision.
Yeah, my wife don't want to live way out there in the country because she's more of a city person.
Dude, when mama's happy, everybody's happy.
Right, exactly.
I dig that. And you know, living out in the country is one thing, but you got to, you know, you got a wife and kids and you're out on the road, you need to be in a good spot that is conducive to them facilitating everything
right.
they have to do. So I totally get that. So, but you're a subdivision guy, so you're doing your yard. How far is your property away from the crib?
It's only 15, 20 minutes. So, but it's all back roads, you know, to it. So
you do all the maintenance out there yourself? You got a couple horses?
Yeah, two horses and a couple cows. And then, like I said, I do, you know, all the haying and, you know, baling and all that. And then I got another buddy beside me that does tobacco, so I help him, you know, hang his tobacco and stuff up.
But so, you know, you're doing this, but do you read a lot? Do you read books? I know you listen to a little bit of 80s music, but what is your other hobbies? Or is that it?
That's it. I mean, I hunt, fish, and all this stuff. But, I mean, as far as reading books and all that, I don't – nah.
How long have you been married?
4 years.
How's that going?
Good. I mean, she keeps me alive.
Does she – I mean, how's the
– She's a vegetarian.
You lying your ass off.
I swear to God.
Come on.
I swear to God.
You
so it's hard
me.
It's hard to take her anywhere that I want to go eat.
Revelation. I've been talking to all you young cats about pauses, periods, and exclamation points in your work. Here's several pauses right now. Really? A vegetarian?
Yep.
God damn. Hang on here. Hey, Kristen. Kristen. I'll bring my damn wife in here in a minute. How did you find a vegetarian? My wife's a vegetarian. The first vegetarian I ever met in my life is my wife.
Yeah, I didn't know she was a vegetarian. And we met at a Gold's Gym. She was working down in Orlando, Florida. And, man, I actually was waking up from a hangover. And I was like, man, I don't go.
Fancy that. The cowboy James Storm, hashtag beer drinker, waking up from a hangover.
I was going to go to the gym. They had this nice sauna. And I was just going to go in there and sit and sweat it out, you know, and she was working behind the desk, and the other guy behind the desk was a huge fan, and he was taking pictures, and she was sitting there like, who the hell is this guy or whatever?
Yeah.
So I just –
Who's this guy with the mullet?
Yeah.
And the gadget beard.
I didn't have the mullet.
Yeah, so what happened?
So I actually called him, man. I called the front desk, and he answered the phone. I can actually see him.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, man, who's the girl with you? And he goes, who is this? James Storm. He started going, oh, what? And he goes, oh, that's Danny or whatever. And I said, hey, man, ask her if she want to go out. Well, the next day I had to fly to Paris because we had the tour.
Y'all went to Paris?
Yeah.
Goddamn, I've been all over the place. I ain't never been to Paris, France. How was it?
It was shitty.
Really? They got the Eiffel Tower over that motherfucker.
Well, once you get out of the Eiffel Tower.
No, it's
the
Leaning Tower of Pizza and the fucking Eiffel Tower, right?
Once you get away from the tourist area.
Right.
I mean, it's yeah.
To all my people that listen in France, I'm sorry that James Storm has run down
your
bad
country. Damn luck.
So anyway, so you're back at the gym, you're calling a dude, y'all about to go out to Paris, France,
and,
which sucks.
And so like I'm starting to leave and I'm sitting there talking to her or whatever, and we were having a nice conversation. I said, would you like to go out? And she goes, yeah, sure, I'd go out. And I said, well, if we're going to go out, we got to go out tonight because I'm leaving tomorrow. She goes, where are you going?
Damn boy, you talking about closing the deal.
And she goes, where are you going? I said, Paris. She looked at me like, yeah, right, you full of shit. She goes, she was just thinking, I want some.
Yeah.
And so she goes, all right. So we exchanged numbers. I left or whatever. And I called her, and she goes, I'm not feeling good. I'm just getting off work or whatever. I was like, all right, well, nice to talk to you, whatever. So I go over to Paris or whatever, and I start calling her, and I run up a $1,200 phone bill.
God damn.
Because I didn't.
Hold on, stop. Pause. Hit the commas of the period. Come in with an exclamation point. Done run up a $1,200 phone bill with the girl you seen at the front desk.
And didn't even get to go out with.
Yeah. So what's up here? Is it love at first sight?
So we just kept talking like while I was overseas and everything. And then you know, I come back and we hadn't went back down to Orlando yet. And so we kept talking, and then I came down to Orlando, and we went out on Valentine's Day. And, you know, ever since then.
You romantic Cupid motherfucker.
But it actually worked out because like, I didn't set up, because I got there and she goes, hey, let's go out tonight. I was like, oh, God. Like, all right. And I was like, call around everywhere, and there was no reservations because it was Valentine's. Every place was booked up. So I actually was like, well, let's try this place. And I was so damn lucky that somebody there recognized me. Like,
so you didn't have to say sorry about your damn luck. You got lucky.
Somebody leaving recognized me and wanted to take a picture.
Right.
You know, if one person recognized, everybody's like, well, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And so the manager guy came over, whatever. I talked to him. He goes, yeah, come on over here. So we, this is a hell of a story. So we went out, we was drinking wine. Well, after that, I said, hey, let's have some more fun. So we go, and we go to this bar, and we start drinking. Well, she's like, hey, I can outdrink you. I said, no, don't do that.
Your wife said you can outdrink you?
Yep. And she's only about 110 pounds.
Yep.
About 5'9".
So what happened?
So she gets drunk.
Yeah.
Bad. And I said, look, you got two choices. You can come back to the hotel, pass out. I'll take you to, and you just leave your car, or I can take you home, and I'll bring your car to you tomorrow. She goes, I'll stay with you. I said, all right. So she stays in the bed. Nothing happens.
I believe it.
I'm laying there. Door gets kicked in. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Hold on, stop. The door at your hotel gets kicked in.
Yeah.
That's the first time you're with the wife, and she's drunk, and nothing's happening.
Right.
But your door gets kicked in.
Yep.
Okay, what happened?
Cop comes in.
Why?
Flashing his light on me, and he goes, get up out of the bed. He goes, you got your clothes on? I'm like, yeah, I got some shorts on. And he looks at me and goes, Storm? And he's one of the cops that comes to the show.
Cop done kicked your door in, shine a light in your face, and then ask you, Storm?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, what's going on? He goes, hey, man, there's a girl out here that says that thinks you drugged her. I said, what? What had happened, and I saw the footage, she was sleepwalking. She sleepwalked right out the door.
Oh, my.
And then they show her. She almost looked like a zombie outside the door. And then the door right here was the exit door to walk right outside. So she walked right outside but couldn't get back in.
Yeah.
And it woke her up. And she came around the front desk, and she was like, hey, I need James Storm's room. He goes, well, I can't give you his room or whatever. And then the guy at the front desk was trying to hit on her and all this stuff because she was just standing there in like a T-shirt and a pair of panties. And he goes, well, have you been drugged or whatever? She's like, no, I don't think so or whatever. He goes, you might have been drugged. And he goes, let me call the cops. So the cops came, whatever. So I'm sitting there talking to her, whatever. And
but she was back in bed with you, right?
No.
Oh, no. So they got busted in on you solo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I came out to the door, she was standing there with the cops or whatever.
Oh, man.
And I said, you know what? Just take her away. This is what happened. Yeah. I was like, just take her away, blah, blah, blah. And I said, man, I wouldn't know what a drug looked like if the difference between either one. I go back, lay down, go to sleep, get up, got to go to the show.
Yep.
Get up, I go to my car. At the same damn time, she comes around the corner to come back and get her car because the cops took her to jail.
Oh, my.
And I sit there, and she's like, what happened? Like, what happened? You almost got my ass through in jail. She goes, I swear to God, I didn't tell them that you drugged me and all this stuff. And she goes, this guy just took it upon himself to tell the cops that. She goes,
she was sleepwalking, and they assumed, you know,
the worst.
They assumed the worst and tried to do their due diligence, but totally misconstrued everything.
Oh, yeah. So
there y'all are. The chance meeting. You're going to your car. You got to go.
Yep.
And she's coming to get her ride. So what happens?
So we sit there and we start talking or whatever, and she's like, I swear, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know what the hell popped in my mind. I said, you want to go out tonight?
Tonight? God damn, you talking about closing the motherfucker up? Jesus Christ.
So
what happened?
So she said, you know what? She said, I'll go out tonight. She goes, but neither one of us is going to drink. I said, well.
Hallelujah.
I said, you're not going to drink. I'm still going to drink. So after that, man, it's been smooth sailing, man.
Y'all been like peanut butter and jelly.
Yep. Basically, she's bullseye. She just keeps me in line.
well, check this out because, you know, cats like us are an interesting breed, and it's a different kind of life. And so you either working or you ain't working. You're there or you're gone.
Right.
Sometimes you're gone for a long time. So how you guys able to cope with this? How's it been for her? Is she your same age?
Yeah, well, she's 30.
Okay, so she's a little bit younger than you. So it's a different schedule, though. You know, it's not 9 to 5. You don't see each other every single day, and you cherish the days that you do. And I missed out on a lot of those, doing some of the things. When I was hot and heavy there in WWE, and or WCW, whatever it was, man, you know, doing a deal, paying the dues, being out on the road. It is what it is, and sometimes. You know, I got to be, you know, tell it like it is. I put the business first.
Right.
But, you know, I don't put the business first anymore. It's family first.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're at that point, too.
Right. And I've learned.
But you got to pay the bills.
Right. I've learned to manage it. And she knows that, you know, when I got to go, I got to go. This is how we pay the bills. But when we first got together, she just don't. I wrestled one day a week, and that was on TV.
Right.
She didn't know about all the house shows and live events that we had to do and all this stuff. She just thought it was one day, and that was it.
But 4 years, and she gets it.
Yeah. I mean, it's still hard no matter what she says. I mean,
hey, traveling's hard.
Yeah. Being, you know, she's there with, you know, my 2-year-old and, you know, basically raising him by herself, you know, while I'm on the road trying to pay the bills and stuff. So, and I always say, I can't even imagine, like, you know, back in the day when the guys had to do that, because now we have FaceTime and all this other shit on the phone and stuff. So it's a little bit easier, but it's still hard, you know?
Yeah. Man, I remember back in the day, probably before your days, you know, if you had to make a phone call, you'd pull over to truck stop or Denny's on the side of the road and got on a payphone. And if you was a high roller, you had a call-in card. But these days, you got a little bit of FaceTime. You got to have good connection for one. But, I mean, it does facilitate the process. I mean, it helps it out a little bit that you can see the person that you're talking to. But life on the road is life on the road. And I do my show for the working man. These motherfuckers that go up and down the road or these people, like, you know, like the truck drivers or the people that go and do what they got to do and they listen to the Steve Austin Show while they're driving to and from work or they're sitting at their damn desk listening to this show or maybe listen to the show that me and James are on talking about the wrestling business, paying the bills because they always send these motherfuckers in the damn mail, these gimmicks in there called bills. And if you do not pay them, they will turn your shit off, your electricity, your water, and everything else, your telephone line.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's simple. Go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Talking to James Storm. I'm waiting for my wife to come in because I want to go back to his vegetarian question. My wife likes to eat a lot of tofu. The ground veggie stuff. It's almost like hamburger meat, but it's damn good.
Yeah.
My wife's an outstanding cook.
She'll eat the tofu every now and then, but she.
What's her staple? What is her go-to stuff?
Mostly the salads.
Yeah, she's my wife's a salad rabbit, making son bitch, man. She makes the baddest salads and pastas like a motherfucker.
She'll bring me a salad and it's just, you know, eggs and everything.
Now, people talk about a salad, they add just salad, it's some lettuce in a bowl. No. Yeah. My wife takes a salad to a whole scientific E equals MC squared level.
Right.
I'm talking about a good ass salad with all kinds of shit in it.
Yeah.
So,
my wife, she pisses me off though, too, because we'll be sitting in bed and she'll just go and grab like ice cream or a bunch of graham crackers, and she'll just sit there and eat it.
Kristen, come here.
And she's sitting here with abs and everything else. I'm like, if I ate that, there's no way I can get rid of it.
I'm sitting here talking to Cowboy James Storm. My wife just came in from Walgreens buying some more Tiger Balm patches. Kristen, as I was talking, she just got out of her Zumba class. She's trying to been getting past this cold she's got. So, Kristen, I didn't know that James Storm has been married to his wife for 4 years. She is a vegetarian.
Oh. Look, now, see, this look at that look. Oh.
So, you know, I was asking him how tough it was for him to be married to a vegetarian because when you and I used to go down to South Texas – We rolled into a McDonald's, and you wanted to get, what was it going to,
a McVeggie burger.
A McVeggie, because they got McVeggie burgers here in L.A., but they didn't that in Cotulla.
No, they ain't got that in Tennessee either, because my wife always get a Big Mac without the meat. So I feel stupid as hell when I got to order. I'm like, I need Big Mac with leaf lettuce and no meat. They're like, what? But then they still charge me for the meal.
No, they've been thinking, man, this motherfucker dumber than shit, or he high. When I used to take her down to South Texas, mister, you got to understand, you know, back in the day, 10 years ago, it don't sound like a long time, but it's almost like the ice ages. So what kind of vegetarian is it? Kristen, what kind of vegetarian are you?
Ovo-lacto. I eat egg whites and I eat cheese.
Yeah. She'll eat those.
But does she eat fish?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
No meat?
No. No meat at all. So.
You see, I love cheese, and, you know, I know a lot of people do the vegan thing, but.
Yeah, no, she don't do that. Like, she'll come in all the time with, like, some kind of pepper cheese or whatever, and have it cut in slices, and then graham crackers, and
But you're stable. You make killer salads, but you also do great pastas and stuff like that. Does your wife like to cook, though?
Oh, yeah.
But
when
it comes to the meat part of it. Is she cool with, like, you know, cooking meat?
Yeah,
you eat a lot of soy meat. That's what I'm saying.
She will cook it, though.
Yeah.
Like, she'll mind cooking or whatever, but.
But see, that's the funny thing about Kristen. It comes from a hardcore hunting family. Her dad, like, chased birds all over the damn United States. You know, whether it's pheasant, duck, geese, whatever. He's a big hunter. But she grew up as a vegetarian. But, man, like, when she's cooking all my stuff, and I cook most of my stuff when I'm on a diet.
Right.
You know, grilled chicken like a sandwich or steaks last night or hamburger patties, what it was. But will she cook meat for you?
Yeah. I mean, she'll cook whatever I want.
All right, so James Storm, happily married, life on the road, not impacting the family life. My wife is going to ride off in the sunset. You just went to Walgreens, honey. What'd you get at Walgreens?
Some Tiger
Balm patch. I told you! I was calling for you about 15 minutes ago. I said, Kristen.
I heard you yelling.
Yeah. I said, that's why you sent me a text. You just said Walgreens on my iPhone. I'm a technology guy, too. And I said, I know she's going to get some more Tiger Balm patches. Because I put some on her traps and rhomboids right there every night. You ever watch that show Overhauling?
No.
With Chip Foose? When he rebuils those muscle cars?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the commercials for it.
Yeah, man. I was putting some damn Tiger Balm patches on the other day. I felt like Chip Foose laying down some pinstripes on a 65 Ford Mustang Fastback. Are you into cars at all?
I am. I just actually just restored an old 1970 Chevrolet short wheel base pickup truck.
Two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive?
Two-wheel drive.
C10?
Yep. C10, man.
What'd you do to it?
I know my
trucks.
I did the whole thing. I rebuilt the engine, 350 in it.
Yeah.
I should have went back to the stock 15s tires put on it, but I put 20s on it. But some low profile tires, painted gunmetal gray, redid the whole inside, put a chrome steering wheel in it, and new seats, still the old vinyl seat, whatever. But I got it cheap, like off the internet. Actually, wound up sticking like a CD player, DVD player, like in it or whatever.
Right.
But then I got 410s under the seat. Like, one of my buddies custom put them in there, but she'll go.
Did you do the vintage air?
Yep. Yeah, we took the, because it knows they have the big heater box.
Yep.
They only had heater. They didn't have air conditioning in it. So we took all that out, cleaned all of it up, just got the two wires coming in, put the air in it.
You
got
to have some AC, man.
It blows cold, too.
What year is that truck?
75?
70.
Yeah.
Step side or fleet side?
Fleet.
Short wheelbase?
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah. And those trucks that had the one stripe that always went down the middle, I tucked that off and filled it up.
Did you do the paint or have someone else do it?
Me and one of my buddies actually did it. I did all the sanding, and he painted it. So.
Did you see my Dodge Ram Charger out on the curb?
Yeah, I did see that.
I was cheering. 1988. I just de-lifted it. It's got the 31s on there. That thing out there has 27,000 original miles. I'm a second owner. 99% original. We filmed Broken Skull Challenge for Country Music Television about a month ago. It's going to come out on CMT on July 7th. Badass show. So I lifted it 3.5 inches with a suspension and put some 35s on it. Now, it looked badass with them 35s. Right. Motherfucker, it looked cool. But, dude, when you lift an old school, old technology vehicle,
you could run
over a June bug, and it will feel like the earth has just shifted on its axis. It was a rough-riding motherfucker.
Yeah.
So I de-lifted it, took the lift kit back off of it, and returned it back to its stock height, and I'm fixing to take it back out of storage. But see, when I asked you a while ago what you was into, what you did for your downtime, you did not say that you was into vehicles.
Well, I'm finished. Well, my wife didn't like it. She wants to sell it because it just takes up room in the garage. They don't understand the cars and stuff. Like, I'm like, man, this – like, and I went and got it appraised, and it appraised over $27,000. I'm like, this, you know.
Right.
Them old vehicles, especially the short wheelbase, there ain't too many of those right around, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm into cars myself, but, man, my problem is, see, like – right now, we're leasing a Range Rover Sport for my wife. Now, before that, we leased a BMW X5 for my wife. We had it for 3 years, turned it in, and shit, I think we had 10 or 12,000 miles to spare. So I drive a 95 Ford Bronco and my 96 Chevy Suburban out there, and that 88 Dodge Ram Charger I keep in storage.
Yeah.
If it's not at the ranch and I'm driving it to my stands, I keep it in storage. Here's the problem. I drive to Vegas every now and then. I like to go down to the SHOT Show. I go to this, that, or go to a UFC event. So when I go on the road, I got a 2007 Chevy Z71 down in Texas. That would be what I used to drive to Vegas. But it's in Texas. I drove it down a one-way trip and haven't brought it back yet.
Right.
So my wife will not let me. Watch this. Commas, and a couple of periods. As James chuckles on, my wife will not let me drive my 95 Ford Bronco with 40,000 original miles, brand new set of BF Goodrich all-terrain TAs on that motherfucker to Las Vegas because it's a short wheelbase vehicle and just doesn't handle that well when you get up to speeds of over 75 miles an hour. So, you know, the guys at the hotel were always used to me showing up and I'm in my pickup and I show up in that damn X5 and they're like, they're laughing at me. Dude, you don't drive these. You're supposed to drive a pickup truck. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make, James, is when I would drive my wife's BMW X5 to Las Vegas, then she's forced to drive my 95 Bronco and my 96 Suburban here in town. Now, 95 Bronco, paramount, but the technology, as far as the braking system, the ABS, the airbags, whole different ballgame. The 96 Suburban, you couldn't turn that motherfucker on a football field round and round. You know what I'm saying? So that's what she's forced to deal with.
Right.
So now I'm looking at trying to get a different vehicle so that when I borrow her vehicle, she's still got modern technology. So I'll never sell my Ford Bronco. I can't sell my 96 Suburban because they get near and dear to my heart. So if I got to put them in storage or take them down to the ranch and store them because you've seen my setup, I don't have too much parking over here. But when I borrow, you can't leave town, James, and say, okay, honey, I'm leaving you the keys to the 70 pickup and you're good.
No, that ain't going to happen at all. Number one, she don't even want to ride in it.
Just because,
like, she don't understand it. I spent all this time with this truck. And she actually told me, and this is a little BS. She goes, you spent more time in that truck than you have me. That's how she put it to me. I keep it in the garage. Like even when we're building the new house we live in, I put it in the storage. I wouldn't leave it outside for nothing. That truck ain't never seen a raindrop.
But when you go on the road, she got her vehicle that she gonna drive, she ain't gonna drive you 70 pickup.
Right.
Depend on that.
Right. I don't think she would even drive it if something happened to the vehicle while I was gone. So if something happened to her vehicle, she would, because women don't understand those vehicles.
Yeah, I got lucky. My wife's first car was a 1965 Ford Mustang Fastback, which her dad bought new off the showroom floor. So he basically, you know, just handed that car over to her at about, I don't know, probably 18, 20 years of age. So that was her first car. So she gets the old car thing. But again, we're a decade older than y'all. I'm going to hit the pause button. I'm going to go to the refrigerator, grab myself and James Storm, the cowboy, our last beverage of the night, and bring this thing to a crescendo, as we call it a night here at 316 Gimmick Street. I'm coming back with the cowboy, James Storm himself. Damn, I'm good.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, Big Brother Jake, a.k.a. Jake Warner.
My government name.
Check it out. I host a show called The Big Brother Jake Podcast. and I've taken my talents to the biggest and baddest platform on the planet. That's right, baby, Podcast One. My show is unique as I talk about everything, life, sports, entertainment, being a single dad juggling several jobs. I'm a hot mess, but it's damn entertaining. Subscribe and review now on Apple Podcasts and listen on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Austin. Unleashed.
All right, sitting here with the beer drinker himself, the Cowboy James Storm, 316 Gimmick Street. It's been a hell of a couple of hours of conversation. Y'all going to hear this in a couple of different parts, but be that as it may, we are where we are at. And we're right in between beers. And Cowboy, still sipping on a cold Coors Light. I have graduated from Belching Beaver Hop Highway IPA 78 to a Ballast Point Pale Ale. That's right. Beer snob like a motherfucker. But we talking about wrestling, and beer and wrestling go together. Cowboy James Storm, Steve Austin, sitting here kicking it right here at my crib. James, did you hear the commas and the periods that I just put in before I addressed you? Because that means I am about to go to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards.
Uh-oh.
Dave Meltzer, at Dave Meltzer, WON on Twitter, awarded me or graded my match in 1991 with Terry Taylor, PN News, and Bobby Eaton. I mean, as the worst work match of the year. You, James, have been in two worst worked matches of the year. In 2006, in a TNA reverse battle royal.
And, I still don't understand that one, but all right.
And in the Six Sides of Steel blindfold match.
Electric cage. Yeah. That.
So we don't need to go into deep detail on the matches themselves. I tried to watch the reverse battle royal. I could only catch part one, and then part two was not available on YouTube. I have yet to subscribe to the WWE Network, which if it's on there, it will be. But anyway, my point is not to go into details on the match and all of the guys at hand or the guys at hand, because I've been in some stinkers in my career. But so what happened? And so what were your feelings when you learned that you had been in the worst match of the year?
I didn't even know that. I don't.
Now, come on, James. You grew up in a dime.
I didn't know about the stop.
Exclamation points after the stop. You're in technology, baby.
That's true.
You got to know. You got your ear word on the street. In 1991, I'd heard that I was in the worst match of the year. In 2006, 2007, these are the hard questions I'm asking you. So if this is news to you today, how do you feel now some 6 and 7 years later knowing that those were the shittiest matches of the year?
It makes me feel good. At least I won an award.
But it's all subjective is what I say.
It is. I mean, the reverse battle royal, like I didn't even know about that one. Like, but it's one of those matches, the boys look at it, they're like, how, what?
Like, here's the thing, and let me bust in here. When you're thrown into a situation, you're booked into a situation, you make of it what you will. You guys are booked into a clusterfuck, and so, on paper, it sounds intriguing or interesting. When it comes down to going out there in that space that is the squared circle and surrounds the squared circle, whole different ballgame of the execution of said match. So that being said, as I watched how that, that clusterfuck, I didn't think it was that bad because I saw 10, 12 minutes of it and I couldn't get part two. It wasn't that bad. You guys did everything you could to make a match of what you had. But that being said, how much stock do you put in, what the dirt sheets or the newsletters say about who and what you're doing in the ring?
To me, they have their place in wrestling. They good thing is they watch the matches, at least. That's all I can say. At least they watch and they give their input. And that's the best thing. Everybody has their own different inputs. These guys are lucky enough to have a job to do something on the internet to give their input. That's how I look at it.
Agreed.
And, you read it and you can either take it with a grain of salt and kind of learn from everybody's, you know, opinion.
Right.
You know, just don't take one opinion. Take everybody's different opinion.
Hey, speaking of the Dirt Sheets, and, you know, we're just talking about the two worst matches of the year, you know, 2006, 2000, back-to-back. I succeeded in accomplishing the worst match of the year in 1991. You was able to pull it off not once but twice, and in back-to-back fashion.
That's pretty good.
That speaks volumes to the career. No, I'm just kidding you. But anyway, you know, back in the day, in the kayfabe days, you know, people started passing around those sheets in the locker room, and they was like, they was kayfabe.
Yeah.
Because if you was caught with a sheet,
oh, yeah,
then you was, you know, on the dark side. And was it wasn't right, because that's how the business was back then.
Right.
Did the sheets exist? When you, I mean, I'm sure they existed, but were people passing them around when you broke in?
Yeah, I remember, I don't even know what year it was now.
Or were you on the cutting edge of the computer technology and everything?
No, I remember they had the, you know, the sheets. It was, you know, what, 8, 9 sheets or something like that. And I'd always lose track and forget, because I could never keep it organized in the right way, like trying to read it too. And then, but I didn't know really where it came from or whatever. But right. I guess people got it mailed to them, so they right. had to subscribe to it and all that yeah. shit. And then later on, I learned. You know, no, these people will subscribe to it. And then,
right.
then, like you said, they were looked at as the dark people, as maybe they were leaking information to people
right.
like this, you know.
Six Sides of Steel. I didn't get a chance to see that. I couldn't find it.
Oh, yeah, don't watch that one. Jesus Christ. I remember.
I caught a couple 2-minute clips, and that was it.
I remember doing that match. And the people there, they didn't want to see any kind of blindfold match. They wanted to see action. They wanted to see ass whipping, you know, blah, blah, blah. I remember we got in the ring, and the damn blindfolds, I had to go and get them, and the blindfolds wouldn't stay on, and we had to keep trying to put them some bitches back on. And then they were saying something, and I remember in the back of my head, I said, fuck it, I'm taking it home now. And we still had about 4 minutes left. I took it home, got out, went to the ring, and Vince Russo was standing right there. When I got back, he goes, I couldn't have done that. And he was the one booking the show.
Yeah.
He goes, I would have probably ended it long before this.
So how'd you like working with Vince Russo?
He was good. I mean, to me, like, he always treated me with respect. Like, he, you know, he'd come up, he'd talk to me and blah, blah, blah. And he was actually the one who kind of gave me the freedom to do my own promos and stuff, instead of like bringing this whole promo to me. You know, and because B.G. James always, he told me the best. He goes, no disrespect.
You talking about the Road Dog, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He goes, you have a Yankee writing the show and writing your promos
right.
for a redneck
right.
that only thinks stereotypical style
right.
of how he talks.
Right.
He goes, he don't know how you really are or how you really talk. If he wants you to be you, he should let you do his own. And I went to him. I said, hey, Vince, you mind if I just do my own promo one time, whatever? He goes, yeah. He goes, hell, go out there and do it, you know. And I went out there and did it. And ever since then, man, I've just been doing my own stuff.
So what's your approach to a promo these days? You got some words to say. And what is the creative process at TNA right now? Because who's booking you guys?
You know, they have, you know, some different guys that have big, you know, John right now, who's doing stuff, and Matt Conway and Dave Lagana is writing the shows. But
when left to cut promos, they say, James, here's the situation, you know, you're in.
Yeah. You go hit the bullet points,
yeah.
and you put it in your words.
Yeah. Do your thing.
Yeah. And so, you know, I make every promo basically almost like real life stuff. Like, if this was real life, what would I say to this guy right here? You know, instead of, you know, oh, I'm going to kill you or blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
or some of the shit they have written sometimes. You know, it's like I'm going to go out here.
You got to put it into what you can actually do.
Because if you don't believe it, the crowd, they ain't going to believe it.
You mentioned earlier in our conversation that one of your favorite promos was Michael P.S. Hayes, but let's go back to that, because we're talking about talking. We're talking about drawing money. We're talking about putting asses in the seats, and you have to have an intriguing angle. You have to have a personal issue. You have to have a worthwhile opponent. So talk a little bit more about some of the other people who you've liked as promo guys that made you want to buy the ticket because you felt what they were saying.
Yeah, I would have to say Jake Roberts was
right.
to me, because he never raised his voice. He didn't never yell at the TV. He made you want to turn the TV up to hear what the hell he was saying.
Or shut up.
Yeah, because you
tell everybody shut the fuck up so you could hear what Jake said.
Because he would say something like, You know, like you would stop talking or doing whatever, just kind of listen to him because, and he just had that delivery that, you know, that, shit's about to go down.
Right.
You know?
I agree.
And he was one of the, he was to me, one of the best promo guys ever. Like he should be teaching guys one on one how to do a damn promo.
Did you watch, and we were talking about this earlier, you saw the Hall of Fame 2014 at WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. I was front row, sitting one person away from the immortal Hulk Hogan. Watching Jake do that speech, and man, he started off and he just started and he got intense and then he took it dark and then he came out and then it was a goddamn acceptance speech I've ever seen, and it was a hell of a promo and it came from his heart and none of it was off of paper. It was all coming from his heart and his guts and his brain, and I was like, God dang, he took me in so many different directions, and it was just, it was incredible.
Yeah,
but it goes to speak to what kind of promo it was,
right?
Just and trying to draw money, but just speaking from the heart, telling about the wrestling business and what it meant to him and the impact that it had on his life and the trials and tribulations that he went through and to where he is now. But God damn, it was riveting.
It was a roller coaster because I remember sitting there and I was just like you said, it's like he started here and then he just went completely dark.
At times I was thinking, dude, you might lose me. And then, right. And I know you didn't. Yep. You just hooked me deeper.
Right.
Oh, he was weaving a tale there.
Yep.
I mean, he was talking about, you know, his dedication or what that ring meant to him. And to me, what it's got to mean to anybody that gets in it. So anyway, we got Michael PSAs. We got Jake Roberts, two influential promos in regards to you. Kurt, Mr. Perfect Henning was your go-to favorite pro wrestler of all time. Is there a number two who comes to mind quickly?
To me, it was Sean and Brett. You know, just because I remember watching Sean, you know, before he got to WWE as the Rockers, you know, and even when they were doing the tag team as the Rockers, him and Marty, and that whole feud that, you know, when he kicked him through the window and all that, I was like, you know, I was like, right. No, you just killed the Rockers, you know.
Right.
So it was one of the – and this, you know, and then the side of the business, you know, always – I don't know what drew me to Brett, like always watching Brett in the ring and working with guys and stuff. He always heard that he worked snug, you know, but he never hurt people, you know.
Right. So, okay, now I'm asking you, we got Shawn Michaels and we got Bret Hart, and they're both the same age. You're building a promotion. You can only pick one of them. Which one are you going
to
pick?
I'd have to take Shawn.
Why?
Just because, I guess, more charismatic and, you know, just he's more over the top, whereas Bret is the technical wrestler. And, you know, if I'm building the promotion, I want the guy that I can send out to help sell tickets and, you know, put asses in seats, and this guy can be over the top, and he'll do whatever is asked for him, whereas Brett is, he's a wrestler. This is what, you know, but nothing against Brett. He can go out and just whoop some ass, and he put on the best matches on the card. You know,
right.
But Shawn has that charisma
right.
about him that kind of draws people to him.
Okay, that being said, now I've worked with both men, and speak in the highest regard to both men. I've often said that Shawn Michaels is the greatest in-ring performer I have ever seen. I've never seen him fuck anything up. I've only seen him perform at the highest level. I've been in many, many more matches with Bret the Hitman Hart and speak volumes of how badass it is to be in the ring working with that guy who is an absolute artist inside a squared circle. So much praise to both guys. So as much as I think about both these guys, you've often drawn comparisons to Shawn Michaels. A little bit with the look.
Right.
You got the hair. I mean, somewhat the same physique. He's probably a little bit trimmer, but the super kick. So was Shawn Michaels influential in your finish maneuver or influential in anything you've done in the squared circle?
No, I mean, just the way he performs in the ring, I mean, he moves so smoothly, you know, and to me, he kind of reminds me of almost like a Mr. Perfect, how he bumps. I mean, he takes just crazy bumps and makes it look easy.
Pretty.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the most positive manner I can reflect.
Right. And that's the way that, you know, Mr. Perfect did it. Like he just made it look easy and pretty, I mean, you know, as far as a super kick, it was just something that I used to use what I call the Eye of the Storm, the Whirlybird, as a finish or whatever. And then you get to a certain point where there's some guys you just can't get up in that move. You know, you get guys that are 280 or something like that. You ain't, and I just figured it's easier just to kick them. You know?
Right.
Plus, that's really the only move I can do when I'm drunk.
What move? Now, that being said, you've never entered the square circle with a buzz, have you?
Not on TV.
Okay, that was a pause, and that means there were several of those commas I was talking about. Did you always use the super kick? What were you using when you first started out?
Yeah, when I started out in 1997, that's when I was working Tony Falk.
Okay, it's funny because, you know, Shawn Michaels has got the super kick over, but, you know, I think, you know, Chris Adams was using it before him, and there's probably someone before Chris Adams using it before him, and before that, someone was using it, but it's always about the guy that gets it over.
Right. I think Shawn perfected it. Because he used it constantly for so many years and, you know, won so many high-profile matches off of it. Everybody associates him as being the founder of the super kick.
I remember when they brought me into WWF back in the day when I was a ringmaster, and, you know, I could go. You know, I was a good mechanic. Wasn't a star yet, you know. But, you know, so they put me in the ring with Shawn a lot after Savio Vega got me in shape because I could give Shawn a good match.
Yeah.
And you know, he just needed a good win. And so, man, I was getting kicked in the shin every single night. You know, if it wasn't that, it was getting beat by Bret Hart. But, God damn, man, Shawn Michaels kicking the shin. I mean, it's like working with Ricky Morton.
Yeah.
It looked good, but never hurt. Right. I ain't never get one busted lip, no nothing, this, that, whatever. It was always a pleasure to get kicked in the chin by Shawn Michaels and lay there and get my damn retina suntan by looking up at the lights. Years later, it would change where Shawn Michaels got his belly button pierced and he was on the receiving end of a stunner. And I don't know how many times I kicked that damn Pearson out of his. He had one of those ring gimmicks in his navel, and that was my zone when I set up for the stunner, and I kick that motherfucker, and it'd pop out, and I'd hit him with a stunner for the 1-2-3 or whatever it was. But times change. But you always got to have a finish, in my opinion, that's easy to give and easy for the person on the receiving end to take, because I mean, you know. The F5 that Brock Lesnar uses is great because he's Brock Lesnar and he's one of the strongest human beings on the planet. And he can give it to anybody and anybody can take it.
Yeah.
But if you put that on a guy that's 5'6", you know, 200, not so much.
Right.
So to all you cats out there who are coming on the way up, think about your finish and think about something that's effective that you can use and deliver to anybody of any size, height, or weight.
Yeah, and I take pride in, like, my 17 years, I've never hurt anybody with a super kick. It's just one of those things. And I've come back and I've had people say, you look like you killed him.
To my knowledge.
No one. to my knowledge.
To my knowledge. On my behalf, I don't think anybody has suffered any long-lasting effects from a Stone Cold Stunner.
Now, how'd you come up with the stunner?
I didn't come up with it, man. We was in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and Michael P.S. Hayes, your favorite promo guy and one of my favorite pro wrestlers, came up to me as he's one of the agents. This is his exact words. Hey, kid, you got a minute? Yeah, I do. Come here. So we go out to the ring, and he grabs a couple of enhancement guys. And I want to show you something. And he starts telling me about this finish move. And he goes, Johnny Ace is using a version of this called Ace Crusher over in Japan. DDP is using a version of this over in WCW, but they're going flat out. Nobody's going to their ass. If you go into a sit-down position and explain it to me. And so I actually started doing the stunner to a couple of the guys, minus the kick. We hadn't invented a kick yet, the setup move, which was also inspired by Jake the Snake Roberts, as he used to always like to hit his guy with the short arm clothesline before he went into the DDT as a setup move.
Yeah.
That wasn't invented yet. This was just about the stunner. So he showed me the move. I immediately liked it and said, yeah, I'll do it. So out of the blue, I started hitting guys with the stunner, but there was no telegraphing of it. People didn't know it was going to come. It could always come out of nowhere, which was good, but you need to telegraph a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, later on, that's when I worked in the kick to the gut to put them in a position of being bent over to ring them up. But it was Michael PSA's that gave me the stunner, and he invented it, his version of it, and bestowed it upon me. So as I used to pay my money back in the days when I was going to school, playing football for North Texas State University to see the Von Erichs beat the Freebirds, you know,
It all came back around.
And he was the one that told me about the Austin 316 promo when I came out of ambulance at King of the Ring 1996, and Mark Merrill busted my lip, and I was going to face Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, in that final match. You know, it was, half of my career was because of Michael P.S. Hayes, a guy that I grew up loving to hate, paying my money to see get his ass whipped in a sportatorium in Dallas, Texas. James, you got any advice to any cats? Because I get people all the time that send emails to questions@steveaustinshow.com about things they need to know, things they need to do to get in the business. Now, I stress trying to find a reputable training ground. I stress learning to tell a story, learning how to take a bump, learning that you only have so many bumps left in your tank, you know, promo ability. But is there anything that you have to say to anybody that would help them further themselves down the road in regards to getting to the business of pro wrestling? And I also, before I get to you, James, I tell everybody to get an education. Anything I do these days, I stopped short 17 hours. I dropped out of college because I got burned out on doing research papers to get into the start working full time at Watkins Motor Lines, driving my forklift and loading and unloading trucks. And the business of pro wrestling worked out for me, as it has you. So I always suggest highly an education, the highest that you can get. But to that, you say what to anybody looking to get into the business? To that, you say what of anyone wanting to get into the business of pro wrestling?
I'm just like you. Find a school with somebody who knows, who's been there, who knows what it takes to get to the top or something like that. If you go to Joe Blow, the mechanic down the road, who's never done anything but worked, you know, a couple indies around the ring, I mean, that's not really going to help you out any. You need knowledge. And I always say, before you learned all these moves, because we have all these guys in the wrestling business now that does 10,000 different moves, learn to fucking sell. I watch wrestling now, and a lot of people don't know how to sell. They'll get punched in the mouth, and they'll just come up, you know, and feed away without even grabbing their face or something like this. So,
dude, I couldn't agree with you more. Let me cut in on you. I was down there, whether it was in Dallas, Texas, or was down there in Memphis somewhere. I was working for USWA, working for Jerry Jarrett and Tojo Yamamoto. I came in. I was jacked up, been playing football at North Texas State, weighed 250 pounds, in shape and good, athletic. But, you know, I had a big man complex. 250 pounds ain't big.
Right.
You know, in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
But it was big for me. It was big for the territory. And I was green. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I wasn't selling. So Tojo came up to me and he goes, let me talk to you. He goes, you no sell enough. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm not really getting what you're talking about. And he says, grab my ear. And he grabbed my earlobe. And so I reached up and grabbed his earlobe. And he cringed over and he turned his neck sideways and he closed his eyes like, I really fucking hurt this guy.
Yeah.
He goes, that's sell. And it was like a light went off in my fucking brain. You know, it was like, oh, I get it.
Right.
You know, nobody knows that you feel pain unless you show pain. Nobody cares that you feel pain unless you show that you feel pain and that it affects you and that it hurts. So that any baby face, any heel has to show that what their opponent is doing to them affects them on a physical, mental, and personal level, and a medical level. Nobody gives a flying fuck.
Right.
Tojo Yamamoto is a guy that by grabbing his earlobe and him cringing taught me how to sell. Now, certainly, you can look back at when I was stone cold. I sold to the degree that I sold in a different fashion.
Right.
But I did sell. And in speaking to selling to your body type, I often reference The Undertaker, who at 6'10", give or take 300 pounds, sold on the run. You know, you had to stay on that guy
right.
because he's bigger than most guys in the territory. So, you know, he would kind of backpedal once you got him hurt, but you had to stay on him because theoretically, by the size advantage he had, he would be able to whip your ass. So you had to stay on him, and that's why you had to your cardio had to be up. But that's how smart he was to sell on the run.
Right.
But you got to sell.
That's it. That's what I tell everybody. I'm like, you can do all the moves in the world, but if you don't know how to sell nowadays, you might as well forget it.
Selling, and then you got to have fire as a babyface,
yep.
A mean streak as a heel. And as we wrap up this conversation with the cowboy, James Storm, total nonstop action on Spike TV, having a good run, turning heel, trying to piss people off, make them hate his ass.
Thanks for messing it up for me, Steve.
Y'all, he's got a tough road to hoe, but it is what it is. And we're sitting here at 316 Gimmick Street talking about the business of pro wrestling and drinking beer. Hashtag beer drinker. James, I appreciate you coming by the crib.
Hey, anytime, man.
Thank you for joining us for another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. For more Steve Austin Show, go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Stream the biggest movies and TV shows for free on Pluto TV. Watch movies like Titanic and G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra, plus TV shows like CSI and Star Trek The Next Generation. Starting this month, check out the 24/7 Stargate channel exclusively on Pluto TV, plus hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows absolutely free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today.
Hey, this is Adam Carolla. Let me tell you about my podcast. We do it every single day, so you can subscribe, and there'll always be a fresh one waiting for you. It's about 2 hours of topical topics, and news, and guests, and comedians, and, of course, my own vitriolic take on just about everything that's going on in the world. Plus, we get a lot of really interesting, notable people who come in. We'll get politicians, we'll get tastemakers, we'll get stand-ups, we'll get authors, we'll get pundits, we'll get, I think about covers it all, celebrities as well. And we'll do some really interesting interviews with them. You can get The Adam Carolla Show wherever you download your podcasts.